From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's our renewable diesel special. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll hear an excerpt from the presentation that Scott Irwin made at the March 7 All-Day Ag Outlook at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana, as it relates to biomass-based fuels.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
By a show of hands, how many people think that you could drive a semi across the United States on soybean oil? Oh, this is a very smart audience. In fact, there's been tons of research that shows you can actually run what they call straight vegetable oil, SVO, in almost all modern diesel engines, and it will literally work. It's not the best thing in the world for them. It doesn't burn as cleanly, but it can be done. And I say that to help motivate, you know, now my comments about how biomass-based diesel fuels are produced. So there's two kinds of what are called biomass-based diesel fuels. The first you might be more familiar with. It's called FAME biodiesel. I'll explain what that means in a minute. And the second is called renewable diesel. But think again, if you're not familiar with these fuels, back to my example of burning straight vegetable oil in the form of soybean oil in a diesel truck. So let's start with FAME biodiesel. How is that made? That's been around for a long time. There's a big plant right over here in Danville by REG. And basically what you do is you take straight vegetable oil, typically most commonly soybean oil. You add some catalyst to it and activate the chemical reaction, and you convert it into something called fatty acid methyl esters. And it's basically a cleaner burning version of the soybean oil that I started my comments with. And it's done in a big vat, and you stir it around, you do this in a batch, and then you do another batch. That is how what we call FAME biodiesel is made. It is not a hydrocarbon fuel. Okay, it's a different fuel chemically. So it has to be blended with biodiesel, with petroleum diesel, typically in blends of 2 to 5%, because it is a different animal than petroleum diesel chemically. Okay, so that's number one. Number two, what about renewable diesel, sometimes also called green diesel? That is made in a completely different process. Renewable diesel is literally made using roughly the same refining technology that you make to crack crude oil and to get gasoline and petroleum diesel. In fact, most petroleum diesel plants are converted portions or entirely converted old crude oil petroleum refineries. And to make renewable diesel, you now take the same old straight vegetable oil, let's call it soybean oil, and you put it under extreme high heat and extremely high temperature, and you end up converting the soybean oil oils into a hydrocarbon, and you crack it and you create a shorter chain hydrocarbon that turns out, with a little processing, is chemically indistinguishable from petroleum diesel. So renewable diesel, you start with, let's just say, soybean oil, and you technically end up with something that is chemically indistinguishable from petroleum diesel. And it's no magic. You do it in a petroleum refining setting. So what you end up with then is a drop-in diesel replacement. So you actually have to use carbon dating to distinguish the carbon in renewable diesel and petroleum diesel. They're so closely similar. So very different fuels, FAME biodiesel and renewable diesel, even though they're both lumped together, as we'll see, very important in the renewable fuel standards, they come under the category of biomass-based diesels, but they're very different in how they're made. There's also a key element here economically that may, I think, be important in determining how the renewable diesel boom is going to play out, is the structure of the two industries, FAME biodiesel and renewable diesel, are very different. The FAME biodiesel tends to be smaller, more locally owned. A lot of them were started with the help of co-ops, groups of farmers, and so on. And they tend to be more locally owned, relatively smaller companies and facilities. Whereas the renewable diesel plants, again, since they're made out of petroleum refineries, they tend to be almost exclusively owned by the huge energy companies with deep pockets. Okay? So keep all that in the background now. Now I'm going to try to give you in 5 minutes a little bit of economic outlook about where the renewable diesel boom is going to go and where it's going to go. So we've talked about this is how you make the fuels and how they differ, biodiesel and renewable diesel. But there's a key thing that almost never gets talked about when talking about renewable diesel or biodiesel. I call them policy markets, because without a whole suite of policy incentives that have been put in place by state and the federal government, 0 gallons of FAME biodiesel or renewable diesel would be produced and consumed in the United States. You heard me say that right. There's probably some that will think that's a very controversial statement, but it's pretty obvious that it is true. Without the incentives, there's no market for this stuff. Why? Because it's really expensive to make, because you're making it out of a food grade raw input that, generally speaking, you only get 11 pounds of soybean oil per acre of per bushel of soybeans. So it's a relatively expensive feedstock. For that reason, we know that FAME biodiesel typically runs $1 to $3 per gallon more expensive than petroleum diesel at the wholesale level. $1 to $3 per gallon. And it has recently been as much as $5 a gallon more expensive. And here's something that the RD proponents don't want to tell you. Renewable diesel is even more expensive to make than FAME biodiesel. FAME biodiesel takes about 7.5 pounds of soybean oil to make 1 gallon of biodiesel. Renewable diesel takes about 8.5 pounds. You heat it up, a lot of that pressure, you lose more feedstock, so you have to put more in. So this stuff is expensive, and it wouldn't exist without policy. Okay? Whether you think that's a good or a bad thing, that's just the economics. Okay. So now let's talk about the renewable diesel boom that's going on. Gosh, just a few years ago, renewable diesel was just a marginal biofuels in the overall picture for the United States. You know, we had like 300 million gallons of a renewable diesel production capacity as recently as 2017. Since 2019, we have added 2 billion gallons of production capacity in the United States. So that at the end of 2022, we're up to 2.6 billion gallons of installed production capacity in the United States for renewable diesel, with another 1.4 billion gallons and nine new plants projected to be added in 2023, by the time we get to that, would put our capacity at 4 billion gallons at the end of 2023. And there's supposedly another 1.4 billion gallons coming in 2024, which would be another 5.4 billion, put the total up to 5.4 billion gallons. Those are the numbers that have led to the headlines that we're going to need another 10 or 20 million acres of soybeans to produce the soybean oil that is going to feed all these renewable diesel plants. And that's why we're seeing all this crushing capacity build out that was mentioned in the previous panel. So that's where that number comes from, and taken as a given without other considerations, you know, I see where that comes from. This is the first time I've publicly ever made this argument, so we'll see if I get booed out of the joint. I'm going to argue that I don't think that that's the right way to think about it. Basically, that's saying all this new capacity that's going to be built for renewable diesel, it's all going to come online, and there's not going to be any other market reactions as that comes online. And in particular, I think rather than looking at it from the supply side, we should be looking at it from the demand side. And here's the way I look at it. It's not terribly complicated. Remember when I said that renewable diesel, like FAME biodiesel, is a policy market? The demand for renewable diesel and FAME biodiesel is set, essentially, is going to be my assumption. We're going to find out if that's right, by the renewable fuel standards mandates. The Biden administration issued preliminary rulemaking for 23, 24, and 25 back on December 1st. That sets, in my mind, you can work out of those numbers how much biomass-based diesel we're going to need to fulfill those RFS mandates. And once that is done, I don't believe we need another single gallon of renewable diesel or FAME biodiesel. So let's just go through just some simple numbers. In my calculations for 23 through 25, the EPA's RVOs from that rulemaking suggest we're going to need 4 to 4.25 billion gallons of biomass-based diesel per year to fulfill the various buckets in the RFS. 4 to 4.25 billion gallons. As of the end of 2022, we had a production capacity for FAME and RD of slightly less than 5 billion gallons. 5 compared to 4 to 4.25. Houston, we've got a problem. And we're supposedly having another 1.4 billion gallons of RD coming on in 2023. And that doesn't account for imports. We have typically been importing 200 to 300 million gallons of renewable diesel a year. And there's this one big honking company out there called Neste. How many people ever heard of Neste? Got one person, two. They're the world's largest manufacturer of renewable diesel. They're a Finnish company. And they are going hog wild with an expansion plans. And they build it and they bring it online. Their current expansion plans will put them in 3 years at producing globally 2.3 billion gallons alone from that one company. So I think they're planning on sending a lot of more imports to the United States to compete for the biomass-based diesel slice in the RFS. So my bottom line, I think there's a big shakeout coming on the biomass-based diesel side of the biofuels world. There is not enough demand for all of the FAME biodiesel capacity and renewable diesel capacity. One possibility, the renewable diesel producers drive all the FAME biodiesel production out. That's one way that this will work for the renewable diesel producers. And this is where the structure comes back in. They have ownership with the deepest pockets. But on the other hand, our little FAME biodiesel producers are actually lower cost producers than the renewable diesel producers. So it's a complicated situation, but something has to give. There isn't enough demand, based on my analysis, for all the capacity that's out there. And some kind of shakeout's going to happen. Part of it, my guess, will be further reductions in FAME production and some combination of the renewable diesel projects are not all going to come online. What does that mean for the soybean complex? It means I'm not nearly as bullish about the impact of renewable diesel on the soybean sector as most people that you will hear from where we are standing today. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it, Todd.
Well, it's a good story.
I don't know if Dr. Butts would agree. There was not enough jokes.
So, questions out here if anybody has one. Oh, there are a bunch. So I've got one, but I can get mine in. Yes, sir. All right. So the differentiation between, for instance, California at the state level, he didn't ask it quite that way, and then the national.
Excellent question, because there's a, like I said, a menu of state and federal policies. But the two most important for renewable diesel are the renewable fuels standard and those mandates, and then the California low carbon fuel standard, which basically you can think of it this way, is that the RFS sets the overall size nationally for the amount of renewable diesel that needs to be produced. And then it all rolls to California because of their, and gets consumed there because of the low carbon fuel standard. But so far, the evidence is in essence, the California or state level standards in terms of setting the overall demand for renewable diesel and biodiesel is redundant. It's set by the RFS.
Can EPA, through the RVO numbers, which are due out in June, the renewable volume obligations, up the ante?
I think there will be pressure to do that, but I think that any adjustments will be fairly marginal. And if you want to know, measure directly a market impact of that December 1st announcement of RVOs, in the days immediately following the RVOs, soybean oil prices dropped about 10%. And since then, they've dropped about another 10%. So it was a remarkable thing to me how the energy industry got way out over their skis about what the EPA would do with the RVOs. Basically, I described it as, they thought that the EPA's philosophy was, if we build it, they'll mandate it.
Yeah,
and it was a huge surprise when they didn't.
We talked about that on the air. So US EPA in November released a projected set of numbers, and they'll update those with their final numbers in June. I had questions here. Yes. What's the incentive?
Well, there's a combination. I'll list them quickly. First off, we'd have a tax credit that goes to blenders of biomass-based fuel. And that feeds back to the producers and then ultimately to farmers because it increases demand. The RFS mandate implicitly raises the price of biomass-based fuels because the obligated parties have to show that they have blended the numbers that are released each year. And that's a mandate. And so, you know, that's a minimum amount that we have to use in our surface transportation fuel pool. And so that implicitly raises the price. And we restrict imports through import duties for paint biodiesel. And then on top of that, California has a low carbon fuel standard, which I won't get into how it does it, but it advantages FAME biodiesel and especially renewable diesel in their carbon counting. And so that gives them further returns. So it's kind of this idea that I like to put it, there's a layering of policy incentives that has led to the boom.
What changed within the economics, whether it was actual or policy that caused companies to build these plants?
I think they really misjudged the Biden administration's commitment to EVs is where they really missed. And so in the proposal, they incorporated a very aggressive new program on what's called e-RINs, where you can generate the RINs that demonstrate compliance through driving of electrical vehicles. So that I think they really missed. And in the internal deliberations of the Biden administration, they simply didn't accommodate the building plans on those companies. Now, also remember, this is a key piece, I meant to mention it, that a lot of people have missed. All of the, as I understand it, all of these renewable diesel plants, whether they're part or entire refineries, can be switched back to refining crude oil and petroleum.
Those are excerpts of the comments that Scott Irwin, agricultural economist from the Urbana-Champaign campus at the University of Illinois, made during the All Day Ag Outlook on the 7th day of March at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. You can hear the whole of that program online right now at willag.org and see the rest of the presentations as well. Again, that's at willag.org. It's public radio for the farming world.